I think it's time.
Okay.
please.
So let me first remind you what I said yesterday. The formulation of Minkowski's theorem requires the area measure of a convex body, which is defined, which is a measure on the unit sphere. And with a Borel set on the unit sphere, we associate the set of boundary points of K. Let's go down. Where there is an outer unit normal vector which belongs to the set, and so on. And so we had to have a set of boundary points. Let's call this tau of k and omega, and sk of omega is just the area of this set of boundary points, d minus one dimensional Hausdorff measure. So this defines a measure on the unit sphere, and Minkowski's theorem characterizes the measures which arise in this way, namely if mu is a finite Borel measure on the sphere, not concentrated on a great subsphere, and satisfying the integral relation, integral u d mu, this is the zero vector, then there exists a convex body K such that mu is its area measure and K is unique up to translation. So this is a very satisfying result, as we have seen. I mean, it's intuitively it's beautiful. We have seen that the proof is relatively easy. On the bad side, of course, we do not know very much about this existing convex body. I mean, this measure determines the body completely, so every information on the up to translation, so every information on the body must be contained in that measure. But it's very difficult in general to pull this information out of this measure. So in general, one will not know much about the body. Of course, I do not tell the whole story here. If, for example, this measure has a density with respect to Lebesgue measure, then the Minkowski's problem is equivalent to finding a convex body with given Gauss-Kronecker curvature as the function of its outer normal. Namely, if this has a density with respect to Lebesgue measure, then this density is just the reciprocal of the Gauss curvature. In other words, it's the product of the principal radii of curvature of the boundary surface as a function of the outer normals. But in that case, we would not know. So if we, say, assume that the area measure has a continuous density, then we would not know that this body has Gauss curvature given by the reciprocal value, because we would not know that the boundary is twice continuously differentiable. And of course, under higher smoothness assumptions on the density, there are results giving the smoothness of K, but this is quite a different problem, and I don't go in this direction, but I wanted to mention it at least. So simple geometric information is not easy to obtain just from the measure. Of course, we have an upper bound for the volume of the body, since we know the total surface area of the body, but I do not see any way for an estimate of the volume in the other direction, given, well, I don't know which properties of the surface area measure one would have to know. So from this point of view, the situation is not so satisfying, but one could think of finding at least rough estimates. So if we know that this measure is in some sense close to the rotation invariant measure on the sphere, so to the area measure of the ball, then we might try to find out whether the body itself is close to some suitable ball. And this, in fact, is possible. In other words, I'm going to talk about stability of the uniqueness problem. In principle, whenever we have a uniqueness assertion, we can associate with that a stability question, asking if the conditions which guarantee uniqueness are only satisfied approximately. We would like to know that also the uniqueness of the body is satisfied approximately, but in some quantitative sense, given by explicit estimates. And what I want to talk about today are some stability results related to the surface area measure, not only directly, but also in a more indirect way. Such stability improvements are sometimes useful. For example, I mentioned yesterday, or I used yesterday, Minkowski's inequality. And in the very end, I mentioned an application to this limit shape of zero cells in a Poisson hyperplane process. And in fact, the estimate which I quoted there makes use of a stability improvement of Minkowski's inequality. So now I would like to start talking about the stability question for this area measure. So we would like to have estimates given of the following result. If the distance of two area measures is small in some sense, we would like to know that the translative distance of the corresponding convex bodies is small in an explicit way. And there is one older but still useful result due to Discant of this kind, and I would like to start with explaining this result. Now, when we talk about stability results, we need some small, some slight a priori information on the bodies in order to avoid degeneracy. So we would assume that the bodies contain some small ball and are contained in some given ball. In other words, I will consider the class of convex bodies in RD containing some ball of radius small r and contained in some ball of radius capital R, where these are fixed numbers. And these numbers will appear in the constants of the estimates, but not... Well, you will see where they appear. So I start with an older result due to Discant, which gives a stability version of Minkowski's uniqueness theorem. So so we consider two convex bodies in this restricted class for given numbers R. And the assumption is that the difference of the two area measures is less than some positive epsilon. This means for every Borel set which we insert here, we want to have that this is smaller than epsilon. And then there is a constant, and this depends on the dimension, on these a priori bounds and a translation vector, so that this is the Hausdorff distance of K and this translate of M. And this can be estimated by the constant times epsilon to the power 1 over D. And the I would like to sketch the main steps of the proof, because there is some interesting aspect in them. It starts like the proof of the uniqueness theorem, and I recall from yesterday that we worked with these integral representations. This is the support function, and I take here the difference of the two measures. Then the first integral is just the volume, and the second integral gives this mixed volume, where this is a function of m appearing d minus 1 times, and k appearing once as an argument here. So if we have this assumption, then this gives us, we can, the support function, the maximum, can be estimated by the radius of the containing ball. And so we immediately get that these differences are small. Yesterday in the uniqueness proof, they were zero, and then the argument was that these being zero gives equality in Minkowski's inequality, and one knows that this implies K and M are homothetic. Now we are in the situation that we only know that these two differences are small, and we need an explicit estimate which can be deduced from this one. And Discant's inequality showing this estimates the relative in-radius. We have our convex bodies K and M, and consider the maximal lambda so that some translate of lambda M is contained in K. So if M is the unit ball, then this would be the usual in-radius of the convex body K, and so this is the relative in-radius now. And this relative in-radius can be estimated from below. Here we have the quotient of this mixed volume and the volume. And the essential thing is here, you recall Minkowski's inequality, saying that this here is non-negative. And by the condition star from the last side, that's saying that these differences are small here, we can conclude, since our bodies are in the class over there, we can conclude that, this is close to 1 and this is small. So the relative in radius can be estimated from below by 1 minus certain constant times this power of epsilon. So this follows from this crucial inequality here. And interchanging K and M gives the same. And now if the relative in radius of K of with respect to M is close to 1 and this also, then of course the bodies must be close together, and this can be formulated in terms of the Hausdorff distance, or we can leave it like this. So the crucial, so this is what gives this stability result, and so this is the crucial estimate. And the interesting aspect is the method used here by Discant to show this estimate. It is the method of inner parallel bodies, which has some other useful applications and can be explained very easily. So what one does is, this is the support function of K, and we introduce a parameter within these bounds. So it can also be negative. And this, in braces here, is a closed half space determined by the support function of K at U, but we add lambda times the support function of M. And the intersection of these closed half spaces, of course, is a convex body. So what are we doing here is we just move the supporting hyperplanes of K by an amount given by lambda times AHM. So if lambda is positive, this is nothing but the sum, the Minkowski sum, K plus lambda M. But the point is that also negative lambdas are allowed here. And for negative lambdas, we have inner parallel bodies. And so this looks, in principle, like this. A very simple example. So let's assume that M is a ball. And this is K, the polygon is K. So the outer parallel bodies of this polygon with respect to the ball are just the usual. Well, and this array is now continued into the inside. And so I move this hyperplane, the supporting hyperplane, a little bit to this one. And so with all hyperplanes which support the polygon. And at some point, if I go inwards, this face will, in between, this face is still there, but then it vanishes, and then we get smaller triangles. In the end, we end up with the center of the in-ball in this case. So this is the complete array of convex bodies. Now, what is so good about this? We consider the volume now of this body K lambda as a function of the parameter. And this has a derivative given by this integral, which is just d times the mixed volume of K lambda and m. So for outer parallel bodies, this is nothing but Minkowski's definition of the surface area. The surface area is obtained as the derivative of the volume in this outer parallel array. And the essential thing is that this holds also for negative lambda. And for lambda tending to minus the relative in radius, these volumes tend to zero, as one sees in this picture. So by integration, we get a representation of the volume of K as an integral from minus the relative in radius to zero, and integrated is a mixed volume. This K lambda, of course, depends in a non-explicit way on lambda, but now the general Brun-Minkowski theorem applied to this mixed volume, and observing the fact that for negative lambda, if we add absolute value times lambda plus m, then this will be contained in K. And in this way, the general Brun-Minkowski theorem gives an estimate of the integrand, where now the lambda appears explicitly only here. So this can be integrated explicitly and gives, after rearranging the terms precisely, the in radius appears at the lower bound, and this gives precisely Viscount's inequality here. And as we have seen, this gives the stability result, the stability version of Minkowski's uniqueness theorem. So this is not, I mean, there remains something to be done here. And together with Daniel Hook, we have investigated this area around the surface area measures a bit systematically, and I mentioned a few results also in the following, without always quoting. And so what we have here is the stability estimate if the difference is at most epsilon, then the Hausdorff distance of K and a suitable translate of M is less than or equal to constant times epsilon to the 1 over D. One question which is not completely answered is that for the optimal order of stability here, so which is the biggest possible exponent for which this is true, and it is conjectured that 1 over d minus 1 is the best one. It cannot be better, because suitable examples show, for instance, a cube with cut off a vertex shows that epsilon to the 1 over d minus 1 is the best order of approximation which can be, or of stability which can be expected. We have proved this for a certain class of convex bodies, namely the area measure has a decomposition into an absolutely continuous part and the rest, and with respect to spherical Lebesgue measure. And if we consider convex bodies for which the remaining part, after subtracting the absolutely continuous part, is either zero or contains only point masses, for these convex bodies we were able to prove the optimal order. So this includes as well bodies with a boundary of class C2, twice continuous and differentiable, as well as polytopes. So for these bodies we have the optimal order, but not yet in general.
But for polytope, something different, logarithm, no? The same order.
Yes. Yes.
And volume estimate exists, distance. How is it different by volume? There is no such result.
No, I mean when we know the yes. You can deduce this from the Hausdorff distance.
Should be better estimate than
D is fixed epsilon goes to zero.
What?
D is fixed at epsilon goes to zero.
I know. Yeah. Interesting,
independent. Mm-hmm. No, but I mean,
D is probably rather bad here, in the constant. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I think yes. But in spite of the main theme of this conference, we have not been interested in that.
You should write C sub D. Yes, this is what you want to say.
Pardon?
C sub D.
Another point is that this assumption is rather strong. So this is essentially an assumption on the total variation norm of the difference of the two mirrors. And this total variation norm is not continuous under weak convergence. By the way, if a sequence of convex bodies converges, then the area measures are weakly convergent. So it would be more natural to have an assumption in a metric which topologizes the weak convergence. And in fact, without much changes, one can prove a similar stability result, at least with this order, if one replaces this assumption by one of on the Prokhorov distance of the two measures, which in a sense is a more natural assumption, I think.
So you can get the same order, you say, for that?
This one, yes. Yeah.
That's much more natural.
Yeah. Okay, now I continued talking about area measures, but in several uniqueness assertions, the area measures appear, but not in a direct way. And I mentioned one such question already yesterday, namely if we consider projection volumes, then, well, we have a convex body and project it orthogonally onto a hyperplane with unit normal vector u. And the d minus 1 dimensional volume of the projection I denote by k projected onto u orthogonal. So this defines the projection function as a function of u. And one might say, classical theorem of Alexandrov says if we have two centrally symmetric convex bodies, Km, convex bodies, by the way, immer with interior points here in the talk. Centrally symmetric, and Vd minus 1 of K is Vd minus 1 of M. Then Let's say they have the same center here, then we can conclude that K is equal to M. And this comes out by observing that this is just given by integral over the sphere, absolute value of the scalar product, dsk of V. So the projection function is the cosine transform of the area measure. This integral transform is called the cosine transform. And this uniqueness result of Alexandrov now, of course, is obtained in two steps. The first step is to observe that the cosine transform is injective on even measures. So we have an even signed measure on the unit sphere for which the cosine transform is zero, then the signed measure is zero. And the second step then, of course, is to apply this to the difference of SK and SM and use Minkowski's uniqueness result. Again, for this, there is a stability assertion with proofs in 3-space given by Campi and in D-space by Bourguin and Lindenstrauss. And I would like to expand this consideration a little bit by applying it to other problems of a similar kind. By this I mean problems where certain integral transforms of the area measures occur. And I would like to start with a list of such uniqueness questions which have been treated in the literature earlier or later. And so the first one I have just mentioned, the first example is Alexandrov's uniqueness theorem, where we assume that Vd minus 1 of K, so we deal with the projection volume or the projection function, and on centrally symmetric convex bodies, this gives uniqueness. The knowledge of these projection volumes gives uniqueness. In the second example, we always consider functionals depending on a direction like here, but now I consider a functional depending on a direction which can be interpreted as an integrated section volume. Not section volume, but section area, surface area. We consider, this is a hyperplane, we consider the intersection with the hyperplane and we integrate up these areas here. So I call this, I think, V with upper index, D minus 1 of K and U, is the integral of the area of the section. So this is the D minus 2 dimensional Hausdorff measure of K intersected with this hyperplane. This is U orthogonal plus T times U. And this is integrated with respect to T. So there is, of course, no Fubini theorem saying us that this gives the surface area. But in the mean, it does. Integration over all U gives the surface area up to a factor. But as a function of this direction, this function has the property that it uniquely determines the convex body up to translation, provided it is centrally symmetric. This same functional can also be interpreted as a mean value of projections. Namely, if we have given the vector U and we consider hyperplanes orthogonal to U and project the body orthogonal here and take this projection volume. And now if we average this over all hyperplanes parallel to U, so we move this round here in 3-space and average, and then this is up to a factor, this is the same functional. And this functional was considered by Beerwald in the 30s and later more generally by Goody and others. And this can be expressed as, well, remember what it was. can be expressed as the as an integral of the sphere, square root 1 minus u v squared dsk of v. So it's of a similar type, and in this case we talk of the sine transform. So this functional is the sine transform of the area measure. Here may be some factor, but I don't recall that. So this is another, the uniqueness theorem goes back to Beerwald, and so far the uniqueness theorems concern centrally symmetric convex bodies, and now there are some examples which have been treated where general convex bodies are determined. Anikonov and Stepanov have considered the following question. They wanted to characterize in a similar way as Alexandrov's theorem characterizes or determines centrally symmetric convex bodies up to translation. So they wanted to characterize general convex bodies in a similar way, and they should suggested the following functional, besides the projection volume. So we have a vector u. Let us consider also the boundary part pointing upwards. In other words, if we illuminate from above in direction minus u, then this would be the illuminated part of the surface. And both together, the projection volume and this illuminated part, determine the convex body, but more, one considers a linear combination with fixed coefficients. So, say, P times the projection volume plus Q times, well, this is the Hausdorff measure of the set of all X, well, let's call this du of k, which is the part of the boundary which is illuminated from above, so where there exists a normal vector which has non-negative scalar product with u. And they showed that this function as a function of u also determines now a general convex body up to a translation. Determines here in this list always means uniqueness, so there is no question for existence so far. A fourth problem appeared in a paper by Goody and Weil. And what they consider is so-called section bodies. My talk in the first week, I considered intersections of a fixed convex body with a translate of another one, and these intersections were summed up. And what they consider is intersection with a plane, and all these are summed up in the sense of, well, we integrate the support functions. So they defined an intersection body, and I consider here only two-dimensional planes. So this would give the two-dimensional intersection body. It's defined by integrating the support function of K intersected with E with respect to the invariant measure on the space of two flats. This is the affine Grassmannian of two-dimensional planes. This is its motion invariant measure, and we integrate the support function of all these intersections. So we get a convex body. Of course, this gives a support function. We get a convex body, M2K. Of course, this could be done for other dimensions too, but I restrict to this case because only in this case have they been able to show the uniqueness, namely this intersection body determines K. If these two convex bodies K and K prime have the same intersection bodies, then K is up to translation the same. And the question turns out to be also from this type because of the following reason. The support function is essentially a transform of the area measure, namely the support function of, well, here is some constant depending only on the dimension, and here is some translation vector suitably chosen, and then this is, here is another constant depending on the dimension, the integral over the sphere of the angle between u and v times the sine of the angle. So again, this support function is obtained as a certain transform, integral transform of the area measure. And again, I already mentioned the uniqueness. Last example is connected to what I talked about yesterday. In the end of my talk, I considered Poisson processes in the space of hyperplanes, and I mentioned briefly that a favorite object of several people working in stochastic geometry are Poisson processes in the space of convex bodies. So random collections of convex bodies are of some interest, either as union sets or as particle processes where one is interested in mean properties of the particles. And one way of describing, of one possible parameter for describing the mean shape of such particles is to introduce a mean area measure, which is a measure on the sphere, well, let's say, obtained in the following way. We consider SK of set A, and let's say X is our point process in the space of convex bodies, and we consider, say, all convex bodies for which the circumcenter is contained in a given Borel set, and consider the expectation of this divided by the Lebesgue measure of this Borel set, and this gives a measure S bar, or let's say Sx at omega. And this measure can be used, for example, to detect anisotropies of the particle process or things like that. And for that reason, one would be interested in estimating this measure in a stereological way. That means from planar sections. So we have our, say, three-dimensional particle process, and this is cut by a fixed plane, and here we observe planar intersections, and the problem is whether it is possible, in principle at least, to estimate, to construct an unbiased estimator for this mean surface area measures on the basis of observations only in the two-dimensional sections. And I don't say more about this, but I only say that this comes down to considering a functional of the following type. We consider, now I have a fixed convex body again, and consider hyperplanes, intersections with hyperplanes, and now I integrate, I consider this intersection and integrate the Hausdorff measure as in the Bärwald example here. But I consider only the part of the surface which is illuminated from above. So I will not take here the whole area, but only the part of it which is in the upper boundary. And again, this as a function of u is expressed as an integral transform of now of this type, but they're integrated only over that part of the sphere where scalar product is non-negative. So these are examples of, and again, this functional, this direction-dependent functional determines the convex body uniquely. And for that reason, so it is possible in this case to construct an unbiased estimator. Now, these are five uniqueness results, and I would like to have corresponding stability results, and this can be done by using a method due to Bourguin and Lindenstrauss by slightly modifying it. And I would like to explain this here. So I consider now stability for integral transforms. All these transforms are of this type here. We have a function on the interval from -1 to 1, real function. I assume that it is bounded and measurable. And this is here applied to the scalar product of u and v. So we have an integral transform here with a kernel which depends only on the scalar product or on the spherical distance of u and v. And we can apply this to a signed measure here and get a function of u. So t phi u for a signed measure is a function. Of course, you can also apply it to a function here by taking the Lebesgue measure there. And we would like, I would like to formulate a general stability result for such transforms. And here is a bit of notation. We consider space L2, real square integrable functions with this scalar product, and norm without an index is always L2 norm for functions on the sphere. And it is clear that because this kernel depends only on the spherical distance of the two points, so it is rotation invariant, invariant under simultaneous rotations of u and v. For that reason, it is immediately clear that one has to consider spherical harmonics. And here, capital Y sub nj, this is a basis, an orthonormal basis of the space of spherical harmonics of degree n on the unit sphere. So this is the dimension of that space, finite. And the Fourier expansion of a function f with respect to spherical harmonics is briefly denoted in this way. So summation is from 0 to infinity, and by yn, depending on f, this is just the orthogonal projection of f onto this space of spherical harmonics of degree n. So this is an abbreviation for this equation. Yn is obtained in this way from the scalar products with the basis elements here. And this does not depend on the choice of the basis because it's just the orthogonal projection. And similar for a finite signed measure, the Fourier expansion, I cannot use the scalar product here, but the coefficients are just the integrals of the basis elements with respect to the signed measure mu. So the integral equation, as I said, is rotation invariant, and for that reason, the spherical harmonics are eigenfunctions. In other words, if I have a signed measure with its Fourier expansion like this, then the transform, the phi transform of this measure, has a Fourier expansion with the same orthogonal projections and some coefficients, which are called the multipliers of the transform. And by the Funk-Hecke theorem, they are given by this integral here. So this nth coefficient, this is just surface area of the d minus one dimensional unit ball. This here is the Legendre polynomial in dimension d of degree n. So if one wants to check the injectivity it's clear of this transform, it's clear what one has to do. One has to compute the coefficients and see whether they are different from zero. Namely, if this transform is zero and the coefficients are all different from zero, then this must be zero, hence mu is zero. So this gives the uniqueness results. And now what to do with in order to get stability. So stability here, if this is zero, then this is zero, that's uniqueness. And now we would like to have an explicit estimate of the form. If this is small, then this is small. And first, a heuristic remark showing what does not work. Suppose we have a function instead of a measure here, and its expansion, and we suppose of this transform for the moment that the coefficients are all bounded from below by a positive constant, then we just use Parseval's relation here, so the square of the L2 norm, and estimate the squares of the coefficients from below by C square, and then we get by Parseval's relation again the norm squared of F. So the norm of F can be estimated in this way. In other words, if this is small, we immediately see that this is small, so this would be a stability estimate. But in the cases of interest, this is not true. The coefficients tend to zero, and the more fast they tend to zero, the more delicate will the stability be. But the idea is in the right direction. We cannot estimate from below by a fixed positive constant, but we can estimate, so this is the basic idea in the approach of Bourguin and Lindenstrauss, to estimate by somewhat else, and I will explain this. So one has a Lipschitz function on the sphere, its supremum norm, and here it's Lipschitz semi-norm. And for convenience, we add these two. I call this norm sub BL, the sum of the maximum norm and this Lipschitz semi-norm. And for a finite signed measure, I denote its total variation norm by norm sub TV. And the general result giving us stability in all these cases is now this one. First, I... without geometry, but the application will then be immediate. We need some growth conditions of the multipliers of phi here. So if T phi is any such transformation, and the first coefficient has to be different from zero, and the inverses of the others, we assume that they are bounded below, bounded above by a power of n. N is the degree of the corresponding spherical harmonic. So with some constants B and beta. And then if alpha is less than 1 over 1 plus beta, then there is a constant depending on the dimension and the transformation and this alpha, such that the integral of this Lipschitz function with respect to a signed measure mu can be estimated. Well, the essential thing is that here the L2 norm of the transform appears to a certain power, and these two norms will later be estimated in a trivial way from above. So we do not immediately have that this measure is small, that it's it, but its integrals over Lipschitz functions can be estimated. And so what is now the basic idea in the approach? That is the idea to consider also the Poisson transform of this signed measure, which is written here. It depends on a parameter tau between 0 and 1. This Poisson transform is also of the kind T phi, of course, but with an unbounded kernel. The nice thing is that the Fourier expansion is of this simple form. The multipliers are just the powers of the parameter. And this is good because we can use this in order to estimate the multipliers from below by the power of tau n and some function of tau. And this in turn is useful because we want to estimate this integral, and we compare f with its Poisson transform, which appears here again. And this is estimated in a trivial way by the maximum norm and the total variation norm of the measure. And here we interchange, this is the same as applying the Fourier transform to the measure and leaving F intact. And this is estimated by Cauchy-Schwarz. Now, an analytic inequality allows to estimate the distance of the Fourier transform for not too small parameters tau by the Lipschitz norm and some function of tau. And if, and on the other hand, so this takes care of this first term, and in order to care about this term, one uses this estimate and Parseval's relation in a similar way as before, but now with this estimate. So the L2 norm of the Poisson transform, using this estimate, we have the powers of the parameter tau here, use this estimate, and end up with an estimate involving the L2 norm of the phi transform, T phi transform of the signed measure mu. And taking this and this, so this with this, and this was this together, one gets that the integral can be estimated by a constant, well, norms as appearing here. Here some function of tau, here another one, exploding when tau goes to 1, but now one chooses tau in an optimal way and a suitable exponent, and then the result is obtained. So this is only a brief version of the, not much has happened here compared to the Borgoin-Lindenstrauss paper, but we have introduced the general function phi and have to do some calculations in order to check for which, so the assumption, show the result again. So star is the condition, the estimate for the exponents, and then one has to do some computations in order to find a suitable beta in all these five cases. And so the geometric application is now that this Lipschitz function is just the support function of one convex body, and the signed measure mu is just the difference of the area measures. And in this case, for the support function, this can be estimated from above, and this also because we have assumed that our bodies are contained in some fixed ball. So this can be estimated by the radius of this ball. And the integral which we have estimated is precisely the one which gives us the, as before, gives us the differences of the volume and the mixed volumes, but now what was epsilon before is now the a certain power of the L2 norm of the transform of the difference of the two measures. And but we are in the situation where we can apply Discant's theorem to get an explicit estimate for the distance of K and the translate of M. And the so the result is if phi and beta are as above, then for a suitable gamma, and this depends on the beta, the exponent in the condition star, there is a suitable constant and so on, such that the Hausdorff distance of K and a suitable translate of M is estimated, is small in this explicit way if the transform of the two measures is small. And this gives stability estimates in all these cases. This beta occurring here varies, so it was essentially D over 2 in this case, but it's essentially D in this case and similar in the other cases. And one addition, if K and M are centrally symmetric and the assumption star holds for even numbers N, then the same conclusion can be drawn, so that includes the first two results over there. I would like to make one last remark on possible extensions now back to the original Minkowski uniqueness result and the corresponding stability result. Here the Alexandrov theorem said if the volumes on two convex bodies, the volumes of the projections on hyperplanes are the same for centrally symmetric convex bodies, then the bodies are translates, and we now there is a stability improvement of this. And now, of course, we could ask if we replace the hyperplanes by, say, k-dimensional planes. Of course, we can apply Alexandrov's stability result then in a k plus one dimensional subspace and get that the projections are close to each other. And if we know that for all k plus one dimensional projections, we can conclude that the bodies k and m are close. But one could also argue in a different way, namely, if we consider a hyperplane again and average the k-dimensional projection volumes onto all k-flats lying in this hyperplane, then this gives us an intrinsic volume of this projection. So instead of Alexandrov's theorem, we might also consider in Alexandrov's theorem, we had the d minus 1 volumes of the projections. And now let's replace this by the ith intrinsic volume. So, for example, for d minus 2, we would assume here that the projections onto hyperplanes always have the same surface area. And there is a result also proved by Alexandrov that for centrally symmetric convex bodies we have equality up to translation. And I've been interested in a stability result for this, and there is one, but with much worse exponent. But I would like to present this here. So we have now an estimate. So I've assumed here that the bodies have the same center, centrally symmetric with the same center. And this function here is the ith intrinsic volume of the orthogonal projection onto the hyperplane. And we assume that the L2 norm of the difference is small to a certain power. And then we get an explicit estimate for the Hausdorff distance again. But this power is very, very small here. And so this result waits for improvement. But up to now, so we cannot use discounts in a parallel bodies or anything like that. So what has to be done here is that one has to go through Alexandrov's original uniqueness proof and see what one can do if one introduces an epsilon, so to say. But one loses, there are several steps and one loses very much. So this result is waiting for a substantial improvement. Okay, thank you very much.
Questions, comments?
What is known for extension of original Minkowski theorem for other mixed volume, this type of measure? Everything fail or something?
Yeah.
Positive?
For other area measures, you mean? Yes. In general, they don't exist. So if SK is now replaced by S sub I of K, the ith area measure, then it is not even true that the sum of two ith area measures is again an ith area measure of a convex body. So everything fails.
I think Pogorelov wrote a book on this subject. But
no, not on this subject, no.
But how to recover body from knowledge of their surface, whatever. If there exists measure, some condition, so this condition failed. But there are some conditions on measure which states that you may recover body if known as I.
By recover, you mean in existence, yes. Existence. Well, there are some, yes.
No, but
No, he has also a result in this direction, but with strong assumptions, which I don't remember, strong differentiability assumptions and some
some conditional measure exists, or it just all fail, actually. What this say?
Essentially, existence is just not true. I mean, there are examples where it's easy to construct. I think this was the first counterexample, maybe it was by Pogorelov, or I don't remember, where a positive measure is given and one wants to have a convex body for which this is the first surface area measure, but the body looks like this. So the surface exists but is not the boundary of a convex body.
This is the way Willman makes pictures of convex body.
It's not a convex body. No, so the surface exists with singularities, but it is very reasonable. The surface everywhere has the prescribed sum of principal radii of curvature. But there is no way to see from the sum of the principal radii of curvature whether the existing surface will bound a convex body. That's the problem, yeah.
Any more questions? If not, the people's next lecture will be agreed, and tomorrow the first lecture is at 9:00.